Chapter 4 Waves. It was just a trip to the Bahamas, but a unique experience of guidance there set the course for the rest of my life. While in school in Missouri, three other young men and I, all about 20 years old, decided to form a gospel singing quartet. Over the holidays, we took trips farther from Springfield than we could reach on weekends. One of these trips took us to Nassau, the capital of the Bahama Islands. It was June 1956, and we were aboard Mackey Airlines on the short hop from Miami to Nassau. Below our prop-driven plane lay a string of islands in the most incredible colored water I had ever seen. Broad bands of light aqua, deep turquoise, and lavender. When the missionary picked us up at the airport and we drove down the left side of the road, I found myself intrigued. I had not felt like that since I was 17 and had gone with 11 others to Mexico. It was hard to believe that mission trip was already more than 2 years ago. The elation that I was feeling came from more than local color, the flowers or the traffic police with their white tropical suits and pith helmets. It was something stirring inside me. Between our singing performances, we talked a lot with the various missionaries who were working in the Bahamas. They told us about an awkward situation on one of the out islands. Three teenagers had come down to do missionary work, totally on their own. They had started dating the island girls, not knowing that in the Bahamas, dating was never casual, as it was in the States. And now the island was full of damaging rumors. I listened with mixed emotions. I was sorry those teenagers had been culturally insensitive to the local beliefs concerning dating. But in the back of my mind, I thought, what a neat idea they had, young people coming here to do missionary work. After our singing engagement, I returned to the missionary's guest room with its white walls, unadorned except for an island scene in a cheap wooden frame. I was kneeling by the bed, opened my Bible, routinely asking God to speak into my mind. What happened next was far from routine. Suddenly, I was looking at a map of the world, only the map was alive and moving. I sat up, looked, and shook my head and rubbed my eyes. It was a mental movie. I could see all the continents and waves were crashing onto their shores. Each wave went onto a continent, then receded, then came up farther until it covered the continent completely. I caught my breath. Then as I watched, the scene began to change. The waves became young people, kids my own age and even younger, covering all the continents of the globe. They were talking to people on the street corners, outside bars. They were going from house to house, preaching the gospel. Everywhere they went, they were caring for people just like Dad cared for the little girl, reaching out for bakshish. Then, just as suddenly as it had come, the scene was gone. Wow, I thought, what was that? I looked where I had seen the waves of young people, but saw only the white wall of the guest room with the island print in its wooden frame. Had I imagined the vision, or had God shown me the future? Was that really you, Lord? I wondered, still staring at the wall, amazed. Young people, kids really, going out as missionaries. What an idea! I thought about the three boys on the out islands and the harm they had unwittingly done by just being normal kids. If this strange picture really had come from God, there must be a way to avoid such cultural problems and yet harness all that youthful energy for world missions. Why, I thought, did God give me this vision? Is my future somehow linked to the waves of young people? For a long time, I lay there just staring at nothing at all and pondering what I had just seen. One thing was certain, I knew I could tell no one about the vision, not until I understood what God meant by it. I started to realize that a pattern was beginning to emerge. God would speak to me and give a distinct call, then a testing would come. When I was younger, as a teenager, God had spoken through the image of that little girl and her call of bakshish. The question was whether I'd try to keep up with the guys with my Chippewa boots and 39 Chevy, or hear that call. Now, 2 days after the strange vision of the waves, came the early stage of a bigger testing. What a paradox that it came as the result of a good turn of events, one that would put me in touch with my family's past. When we flew back into Miami for our next engagement and checked into a motel, the others wanted me to go out. "Lauren, we're ready to go eat. You coming?" "No, thanks. I think I'll pass." Long before our plane had touched down, something had been stirring in my mind. A broken family tie was here in Miami that was more important to me right now than a meal with the guys. I knew my Aunt Arnette lived here, the one who had disowned Dad 27 years ago when he decided to become a preacher. Over the years, other relatives had told us Aunt Arnette had done very well for herself. She now owned a furniture factory and several retail stores in the area. As for her younger sister, Aunt Sandra, no one seemed to know where she was. I knew from Dad, after all those years, Aunt Arnette was still bitter. Dad had managed to contact her 3 years ago when Granddad Cunningham died. She had said, "I wouldn't cross the street to come to his funeral." What will happen if I try to call her, I thought to myself. As soon as I was alone, I reached into the drawer beside the bed and pulled out the phone book. A shiver of excitement swept over me. There it was, the same name, in the phone book, Arnette Cunningham. Could it be my Aunt Arnette? I dialed the number. "Hello?" Her voice. I had never heard it before. Of course, it had a familiar timbre. She sounded like a Cunningham. "Hello, I'm Lauren Cunningham. My father is Thomas Cecil Cunningham. I wonder if I'm your nephew and if I could meet you." A silence. Then, "No, I can't. I'm too busy." Click! The next day was Saturday. My friends were going swimming. As much as I love spending time on beaches, I surprised myself by choosing again to stay at the motel. Alone in the room, I stretched out on the bed and looked at the phone. I couldn't forget that brief and terse conversation with my aunt the day before. It had opened a whole closet full of family memories. I leaned against the headboard of the bed, staring across the little motel room. Through the years, all of our unopened letters had been sent back, and any phone calls had been refused as well. Yet something about the sound of that strange but familiar voice made me want to try once more. I reached out for the phone. "Hello, this is Lauren again. I'm sorry to bother you, but tomorrow I'll be leaving town. I wondered if I could just meet you." "I'm sorry, but my employees are having a birthday party for me today and I couldn't possibly see you." Aunt Arnette hung up again, but I had made an inch of progress. At least, she had given an excuse for not seeing me. I got an idea and went shopping. What do you buy a woman for her birthday when you don't know her? I decided on a linen handkerchief with lots of lace, like Mom always loved. Then I carefully chose a birthday card, not too sentimental, but one that just said, "Happy Birthday, Aunt." By Sunday afternoon, we were ready to leave town. I called from a phone booth on Biscayne Boulevard, asking her for just a few minutes of her time before I left town. This time, Aunt Arnette, probably out of sheer curiosity, agreed to see me. We drove our station wagon through palm-fringed streets, where houses sat comfortably amid tropical landscaping. After a few minutes, we pulled up before a large gray-blue house with a screened front porch. Remembering Arnette's bitter words, scorning my dad for choosing to tramp through life, living off charity with religion as an excuse, I hastily checked my hair in the rearview mirror and straightened my tie. As I got out, leaving my friends to wait in the car, I could see the shadowy outline of a woman watching me from the screen porch. I walked measuredly up to the steps. Suddenly, I was face to face with a woman who looked like Dad. She had carefully coiffed hair and was wearing large diamonds on her fingers, but strangely, somehow, I felt a sense of belonging. Hi, I'm Tom's boy. Aunt Arnett looked me over, searching my features. A long silence followed as we stood there on the steps. I brought you a little something for your birthday, I said at last, handing her the card with the handkerchief tucked inside. Aunt Arnett took the card. You look so much like your father, she said, and then softly, the same brown hair, the same eyes, the same smile, but you're a little taller, aren't you? There was a heartbeat's pause. She smiled, wavering, then suddenly her eyes filled. It's been so long. Then she urged me to come inside and to bring my friends, too. I thanked her for the kind invitation, but told her as I stepped in that I really had only a few minutes. I answered her quick questions about my parents, explaining that I too was preparing to be a minister, going to school in Missouri, and traveling with the singing group through the summer. We had just come from the Bahamas. She asked how far north we would be going, I told her, and another silence filled the room as her eyes continued to measure me. Then she said carefully, "You have another aunt, you know, Lauren. Compared to your aunt, Sandra, I'm a pauper." That was quite a statement, I thought, glancing around me. When Aunt Arnett learned that our tour would take us near Aunt Sandra's summer home, she urged me to contact her. I looked at my watch. It was really time to go. We shook hands, and she asked how she could find me. I left her a copy of our itinerary. A few days later, Aunt Arnett called us on our tour to say she had arranged for me to meet my Aunt Sandra. A chauffeur was sent to the Pentecostal church where we were singing to drive me to Aunt Sandra's summer home in Lake Placid, New York. Aunt Sandra and her husband George moved in a glamorous world I had never known before. What really impressed me was Aunt Sandra herself. It was hard to believe she was 50, with laughing gray eyes and wavy short brown hair. She was kind, too, making me feel totally at ease, reminding me of my sister Phyllis. Aunt Sandra took me in like a long-lost son. Even Uncle George, a tall, cool New Englander, was cordial. The extent of their acceptance of me was demonstrated before my last year at Central Bible Institute. My parents and I had worried about how we were going to come up with my tuition, but Aunt Sandra wrote to say they had decided to provide the money for me to continue my education as far as I cared to go. The next year, Dad, Aunt Sandra, and Aunt Arnett were reunited after so many years apart. A happy ending, I smiled to myself. What I didn't see at all was that the reunion had set the stage for a major testing.